Welcome to the November 2014 issue of Dialogues in Dermatology. The American Academy of Dermatology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The American Academy of Dermatology designates this enduring material for a maximum of 2 AMA PRA Category 1 credits. Physicians should claim only the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. This activity is recognized by the American Academy of Dermatology for 2 AAD recognized credits and may be used toward the AAD CME award. Participation in this activity is completed by listening to dialogues on CD or a downloaded MP3 file, achievement of a 70% or higher score on the post-test, and completion of an activity evaluation. The date of original release for this issue is November 2014. The expiration date is October 2017. At the conclusion of this learning activity, participants should be able to recognize gender differences in the structure and function of the skin, muscle mass, skeleton structure, and pain tolerance. Identify social and societal reasons for why more men are seeking out aesthetic treatment. List the common causes of papules and plaques on male genitalia, psoriasis, eczema, neoplasia, infection, and scabies, and identify common infectious skin diseases in the returned traveler. Contributors to this issue of Dialogues in Dermatology have disclosed the following financial relationships. Dr. Deanne Mraz Robinson has been a principal investigator for and received grants and research funding from Allergan, Inc., Cabocon, and Cynosure, Inc., and has served on the advisory board and received grants and research funding from Thermi Aesthetics. Dr. Jeremy Ethan Moss has been a principal investigator for and received fees from Abbott Laboratories, Amgen, Janssen Ortho Inc., and Pfizer Inc. He has been a speaker for and received honoraria from AbbVie, DUSA Pharmaceuticals Inc., Galderma Laboratories LP, LEO Pharma US, Medicis Pharmaceutical Corporation, and Ranbaxy Laboratories Limited. Dr. Mary C. Martini has been a principal investigator for and received grants and research funding from Dermtech International and Melasciences. She has served on the advisory board and received honoraria from Dove Unilever. Dr. Terrence Keeney has been a speaker for and received honoraria from SkinCeuticals LLC and has a relationship with Melasciences and has received grants and research funding. All other contributors, including editors, interviewees, reviewers, and staff, reported they have no relevant relationships with commercial interests. A comprehensive list of disclosed financial relationships is available in the syllabus.
Welcome back to Dialogues in Dermatology. This is Terry Cronin, your editor-in-chief. This is Dialogues in Dermatology for November 2014, Volume 70, Issue 11. I hope you're enjoying November and looking forward to Thanksgiving. In this month's edition, we set out to have a masculine theme. We'll be talking about male aesthetics, male genital dermatology, and worrisome diseases that travelers bring back when they adventure abroad. Male aesthetic patients are unique from their female counterparts. Important distinctions lie in the sexual dimorphism, with men possessing distinct anatomy, pathophysiology, and biopsychosocial needs. The realm of male cosmetics is growing rapidly, and thus attention to this cohort is paramount. In this dialogue, we join Dr. Terrence Keeney and Dr. Jeremy Moss, who give us their insights on the aesthetics of male dermatology.
So this is Dr. Jeremy Moss for Dialogues in Dermatology, and I'm here with Terrence Keeney, Associate Dermatologist at the Washington Institute of Dermatologic Laser Surgery and Assistant Clinical Faculty at George Washington University Hospital, the Departments of Dermatology and Neurology. Fortunate to have Dr. Keeney here to talk about male aesthetic dermatology, and I'd love to jump right in and hear about what got you interested in this subject.
Well, thank you, Jeremy, for having me, and thank you to the AED for allowing me to participate today. As a male, a young professional, looking at the aesthetic market, when I previously would go to meetings or read about the aging face, invariably aging and beauty focused on the female face, and 50% of the world's population are men. And I felt like it was a really underserved area, both academically and commercially, the study of the male aging face, because as males age, as younger males who are inherently more cosmetically or aesthetically conscious, it behooves the dermatology community to understand how men age and how to help them age more gracefully. And so that's really what drew my interest, and I really felt there's an unmet need. And that's what led me to start W for Men, which is a male-specific cosmetic and laser center in Washington, D.C.
So what do we know about the market, actually? Is it a big market? Is it growing? Is it changing? How is that being viewed at this time?
So the male aesthetic market is still a fraction of the total aesthetic market. Now, the data varies. The American Society of Plastic Surgery has done the most wide-ranging yearly surveys of male versus female aesthetic procedures. And in 2012, over a million minimally invasive cosmetic procedures were performed in men, which is 8% of the total market. That did grow by 6% from the year prior, so it is growing, but once again, it's still a fraction. Now, I think from the dermatology's perspective, I think that number's a little low because I think plastic surgeons see less men than dermatologists. So I say on average, around 10 to 12% of all minimally invasive cosmetic procedures are performed in men. Now, I think that market is growing and it has the potential to grow rather rapidly. Where I see a lot of the growth in the male aesthetic market is in younger millennial men, men aged 20 to 40. And the reason I believe that is if you can look at other industries where you see a lot of growth in the male market, what I call the canaries in the coal mine, that's the men's skincare and grooming market and men's fashion. Now, those markets are growing pretty rapidly, particularly in that younger segment, those men aged 20 to 40. And I think as those men age, approach their 40s and 50s, hopefully, as dermatologists, we've studied and reached out to them, and they'll turn to aesthetic procedures because I think these younger men are more cosmetically conscious, partly due to the fact that social media puts pressure with the constant sharing photos. But I think there's a tremendous growth potential in the male aesthetic market.
So I'd flip that on its head and I'd say maybe why the opposite? Why isn't it 50-50? There's 50% men, 50% women. What is it about men that makes them not starting out in the first place being consumers of aesthetics?
Well, it's twofold. You know, if you look at male behavior and what males look for, when you look at just gender in general, there's sex differences, which are biologic, and then there's gender kind of conventions where society puts different sexes in kind of societal expectations. And I think for a long period of time, for men to care about their appearance was sort of a social taboo. And we really see that in an older generation, the baby boomers, where caring about their appearance was not as important. And also, if you look at just the commercial market, you look at companies that are in the aesthetic space, females are apt consumers, or at least right now, they haven't spent much time and money to concentrate and educate men on all the other aesthetic procedures. So I think it's partly the societal expectations of genders, as well as the marketing of companies in the aesthetic male space that have largely ignored men. And I think also from the academic standpoint, there hasn't not been much study from an academic point of view, from a dermatology of plastic surgery view, to analyze how men should be treated. So there's a big void in the male market.
And what about the nature of men in general on just generally as patients, making broad sweeping generalizations? They tend to utilize health services somewhat less than their female counterparts. Is that a fair generalization or is that something that's borne out by studies or things that we know?
Absolutely. And if you look across the board at overall preventative healthcare services, men in general are poor healthcare consumers. If you compare men and women, even when you eliminate reproductive services, so you take away all the OBGYN visits that women go to more frequently when they're younger, and you just look at preventative healthcare services, visits to their primary care physician, men are less likely to go see a physician. But when men do go see a physician, what we also find is men tend to be more passive patients. They tend to ask less questions. They tend to pay less attention to their body changes, and they're less likely to kind of interact with the healthcare provider. Not only that, the healthcare providers often provide less care to the male patients. Studies have shown that healthcare providers are less likely to provide detailed explanations as well as strategies to improve health behavior. So if you just look across the board, men tend to have poor health care utilization. Now, in dermatology, we see that as well. If you look at the Medicare data, men are less likely to go see a dermatologist. And even one academic institution found that 43% of their patients over a year period were men. So men are less likely to see a dermatologist. In terms of preventative dermatology behavior, men are less likely to use sunscreen, less likely to attend skin cancer screenings. So men are really this at-risk population that we need to reach out to.
Now, thinking about men as compared to women and male versus female aesthetic dermatology, what are some unique aspects of male aesthetic dermatology in contrast to just aesthetic dermatology?
Well, number one, whenever you're examining an aesthetic patient, the individual anatomy is really important to analyze. And there's great data that suggests that men and women, particularly the male face and the female face, are very different. Now, when we talk about the face, there's many different layers that influence the facial contour. So if you look at the skull, we'll start lowest. If you look at the skeletal anatomy of the face, not only is the male skull larger, but it also has a unique shape. If you look at the, and I'll start working my way down. If you look at the upper face, the male forehead is wider and higher with a more increased backward slope. If you look right above the eyes, the superorbital ridge is more pronounced in men, particularly in the medial glabella area. And in fact, forensic scientists used to look when they found skulls or skeletons to determine the sex of that skull. They would look at the glabella and look at that forward projection. If they saw that, they would determine it was a male skull. So it's a very unique projection in the midline superorbital ridge. Moving down to the midface, men tend to have a flatter anterior cheek projection of the skull with a more prominent lateral zygomatic arch. So men's midface is, instead of being more anterior, it is flatter and wider. And then if the lower face, the jaw, tends to be once again wider in men with a more of a right angle to the mandible. And then the chin tends to be wider once again with a forward projection. So in general, the male face is a wider square shape as opposed to the female skull, which is tends to be in a heart shape. Moving on, once again, the contour is not just the skull, but it's also the soft tissues, which include the muscle and the adipose layer. So overall, the male skeletal muscle mass is much larger than women. If you look at the facial musculature, studies haven't really analyzed the difference in mimetic muscles between the genders, but what they've looked at is the facial muscle movement and found that men tend to have a greater movement capacity in the face, even when you correct for the differences in size of the face, suggesting that the male mimetic muscles of the face are larger in men than women. And then in terms of adipose layer, overall women tend to have more adipose or fat tissue in their body, and they tend to accumulate it in different areas. If you look in the abdomen, women tend to accumulate adipose below the waistline, so in the hips and thighs and buttocks, where men tend to accumulate their adipose in the central trunk abdomen. And when you look at the face, once again, men tend to have less subcutaneous fat, where it's less prominent. Those fat pads in the mid-face are thinner in men, as opposed to women have a nice thicker medial fat pads that give them more of an anterior cheek projection, once again, determining the different facial contour between men and women. So adding all those things together, the facial muscles, the underlying skull shape, as well as the adipose layer, gives men and women a completely different shape, which is your baseline. So, as they're aging, you're trying to recreate that normal face of the different genders. So you have a different starting point just from the initial consultation or evaluation of a patient.
Can we go even one layer further than that, though? I mean, you did a great review on those aspects of things, but even going one layer further into vasculature, sweat, sebum, is there pronounced differences, sexual dimorphism in those aspects?
Absolutely. And really, every organ system shows differences between gender, and the skin is no different. And as dermatologists, we should understand that because we know that the skin is a very sex steroid responsive organ. So the reason male and females are different is the quantitative difference in sex steroids and how they impact an organ. So in the skin, we know androgens affect several functions of the human skin, including sebaceous gland growth and differentiation, hair growth, epidermal barrier homeostasis, and wound healing. And because of the ability of the skin to respond to these quantitative differences in sex steroids between genders leads to differences in cutaneous physiology. In terms of some physiologic differences that are important when you're thinking about aging and cosmetic treatment, men tend to have a thicker skin, both epidermis and dermis. This difference is consistent through, the gender difference is consistent throughout life, but becomes more pronounced as men and women age, because postmenopausal, when women lose the influence of estrogen, their skin thickness decreases rather suddenly. Men also, once again, have a different terminal hair distribution, where men have thicker terminal hair in the what we call androgen-dependent areas, which include the beard area, chest, abdomen, back, and thighs. And men also, the androgens also affect cutaneous appendages. You mentioned sweat and sebum production. Men tend to produce more sebum and sweat, even when you correct for body surface area. And lastly, cutaneous vasculature is extremely important when considering aesthetic treatment. Men have a more vascularized upper dermis. Both the mean flow and volume of facial skin vasculature is greater in men. Now, why this is, some speculate that the thicker epidermis and dermis requires increased vasculature to support it. Also, the vascular plexus associated with these thicker terminal hairs in the lower face are larger in men to support these terminal hairs. And clinically, this is supported in the plastic surgery literature, where men have a statistically significant higher bleeding complications from lower facelifts. Roughly 4% of all facelifts in men have bleeding complications as opposed to 1%, once again suggesting that there's increased vasculature, particularly in the lower face. So this is something important to consider when doing injections or injectables in the lower face in men.
So let's think about procedures now. First of all, just getting them in the door. What motivates a man to come to the doctor? What are their goals? How are they different from women? Who are the people who are actually coming in this I believe it was 8%, you said, who are actually coming in the door. Who are these people? What's motivating them? And what are they asking? And maybe in contrast to what women are asking.
Well, unfortunately, there's not great survey data of patients that have come in to cosmetic clinics. My experience after opening our men's cosmetic center, I've found surprisingly that when coming to a cosmetic center, only 28% of my patients actually came in with a specific cosmetic concern. I define that as coming in saying, doctor, I want to take care of these wrinkles. I feel really flat and depleted in the face, or I want to get rid of some unwanted adipose. So it's only a fraction of the patients approaching that really have specific cosmetic concerns. A lot of them coming in and they just want advice on how to improve their overall appearance with really unspecific demands. And another large majority of the patients are coming in for previously medical dermatologic issue that's not covered by insurance, whether vascular treatment of rosacea, laser treatments of scars, acne scars. So what we're finding is in terms of the cosmetic procedures, not everyone's coming in with a specific cosmetic concern. But once again, the average age of the patients I saw is much younger. The average age of the patients in my clinic were 39 years old, once again suggesting that these younger men are the ones that are seeking these cosmetic procedures. In terms of what procedures were most common that I performed, over 60% of my procedures were laser procedures, which is surprising. A lot of cosmetic dermatologists think that chemical peels and injectables are kind of the stepping stone into the medical aesthetic world. Well, in men, I think they appreciate some specific and scientific background. The lasers make sense for them as opposed to injectables. I feel like men have a big concern of feminization when you start bringing up fillers and Botox. And that's something I work with my patients over time and really kind of educate them. Because once again, most men are not educated on the available cosmetic procedures that we have, what they can and cannot do. And so in the initial consultation, it's very important to spend a lot of time with your male patients. Don't assume they know anything. And men tend to not to ask questions. So in my male initial consultations, I tend to talk more than I do in other visits because I don't assume they know anything. And when they don't ask me a question, that doesn't mean they understand it. So there's a lot of hand-holding and talking in that initial consultation.
So why don't we start with the lasers then, because it sounds like that might be a majority. Can you subdivide down? Are you talking about hair, redness, and fractional lasers? Are there other laser procedures that are very common? And is there anything unique about how you do them in men versus women, or is it really what motivates them to get in the door is the only real difference there?
Whenever you're doing a laser treatment, you want to think of the skin optics of that patient. I mentioned the physiologic differences in the skin of men, and these are important factors to consider when using lasers in men. Once again, the men have a thicker epidermis that increases the potential of laser scatter, so the laser may not penetrate as well to your targets, because most of our chromophores that we're using, our lasers are found in the dermis, whether it's vasculature, tattoo, pigment, water with resurfacing. So once again, there's an increased potential of laser scatter. Once again, the thicker skin, the thicker dermis in male patients mean that some of these targets are deeper down. So if you're talking about tattoo removal, that ink can be much farther down than in a thinner female skin, as well as that vasculature. So these are things to think about, particularly in the consultation. So some of my male patients, they take more treatments to get the optimal clinical outcome. But in terms of what treatments are popular in male patients, I think rosacea and that central face redness is extremely common and popular treatment in our male patients. Once again, I counsel them on more treatments might be necessary. When you're thinking about rosacea, there's also the unique male subtype, the Fibinus or glandular rosacea, which is much more common in men. And those male patients, in terms of laser treatments for rhinophyma and rosacea, it's harder to treat really severe rhinophyma. So when I'm evaluating a patient, if I see any early indication of a rosacea patient with some fibrous changes to his nose, I advise early and aggressive treatment. The treatment that I've had success with is a fractionated ablative laser resurfacing of the nose in those early patients. I think once it gets really bulbous, it's much more difficult to do it alone with lasers. In terms of other treatments, laser hair removal is a popular treatment in men. There are some unique areas that we treat our male patients as opposed to women, including the back. One area that I find increasingly popular in the Washington, D.C. area is the neck. Pseudofolliculitis barbae is a very common concern, particularly in our darker skin types with the curly hair that curls around and pierces the skin, so it's more of an anatomical susceptibility. But I also find in a lot of male patients who often wear ties and shirts, I call what's mechanical pseudofolliculitis. With the chronic friction of that neck, they get perifollicular papules and irritation. And once again, laser hair removal can be really helpful in those male patients. It still allows them, if you just treat the anterior neck, to grow a beard in the future. I just bring it up just below their jawline. And once again, when treating men with laser hair removal, the terminal hairs of the beard and even on the body tend to be thicker and more darkly pigmented than women. So in terms of your treatment settings, lower fluence and longer pulse duration are needed because this is a bigger target that you have when you're treating the male hair. Tattoo removal is another popular treatment in our male patients. If you look overall in the population, men have more tattoos than women. If you look at the younger population, it's probably 50-50, but older men, it was popular in older men, not in older women. So you're looking at all age groups, men have more tattoos than women. And a recent study out of Italy looking at clinical factors that determine a good response to laser tattoo removal found the treatment of tattoos in men tends to be more difficult. So once again, I advise patients in my initial consultation, and my theory is, once again, that the thicker dermis allows for the deposition of more pigment deeper down, which makes it more difficult to treat in fewer sessions. And then in conclusion, another popular laser treatment is a non-ablative fractional resurfacing. Most of my men, given their work constraints and family time, do not want much downtime. So the ablative fractionated resurfacing lasers are not very popular, but the non-ablative can be a great option for men because men in general, as I mentioned before, do not use sunscreen as well, and they tend to have more photo aging. So this can be a great option for them with less downtime. One parameter to think about is, once again, the thicker epidermis and dermis requires a higher fluence, so you can create deeper microscopic treatment zones or MTZs to get a better clinical response.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very good review on lasers. I would be really curious also to hear the differences you find in neuromodulators and fillers, because it sounds like there's more differences than I was giving credit for in the laser population. What's your experience on those sort of procedures?
So we'll start with neuromodulators. In terms of the data, a recent review in DermSurge looked at all the pivotal clinical trial data and found that on average, 10% of those patients enrolled in those studies were men. But very few of them actually looked at the differences in genders in those treatments. Only two studies accounted for the gender of the patient in terms of treatment. One study just looked at subgroup analysis. The men and women were not treated any differently and found that men had a poorer response to the similar dose of neuromodulator. The second study actually adjusted the dose for men with an increased dose in the male patients, and once again still found decreased efficacy in the male population. So once again, in terms of neuromodulators, it suggests that men require higher doses. What dose is needed is unclear.
That was a great summary of so many different aspects of male aesthetic dermatology. And I'm going to ask you to just summarize if you have any future considerations and any last words or pearls for us. But I do have to ask before that, probably the question that everybody is wondering is have you found any truth or not truth to the idea that men handle pain differently than women in all of these procedures? Do you find you have to do anything different when handling male patients as compared to female patients?
Absolutely. I find my male patients, and excuse my language, I find they're big wimps in terms of elective cosmetic procedures. They tend not to handle the pain as well as women. So I'm proactive in pain control, but I'm also very proactive in explaining that this might be uncomfortable because you don't want to scare them off, which is interesting because in general, if you look at pain literature, it's thought that men have a higher pain tolerance, but I find in elective cosmetic procedures, they don't.
And just any future things, directions that are going to be happening in a male aesthetic market?
Yeah, absolutely. Two important areas that you should not forget is body contouring. When, in particular, there's a great treatment. The cryolipolysis is a very effective treatment since men have more adipose and tends to accumulate in the lower abdomen area where cryolipolysis can be very effective. But also do not forget when you're treating your aesthetic male patients about skincare. In general, men do not use skincare products, including sunscreen, moisturizers, antioxidants, as well as women. So I appeal to a lot of males' wallet when I'm talking about skincare. I'm saying you're spending the time, money, and effort to use cosmetic procedures. You might as well try to preserve the results by using sunscreen, start a topical antioxidant, and maybe add a retinoid at night. I do not try to overwhelm them, though, because they won't use them. So I slowly add up. And so do not forget skincare when you're treating your male cosmetic patient.
Well, Dr. Keeney, thank you so much. What a great review of male aesthetic dermatology.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you for having me.
According to the American Society for Aesthetic Plastic Surgery data, in 2013, men underwent more than 1 million cosmetic procedures, accounting for roughly 9% of all aesthetic procedures. Overall, male cosmetic procedures increased over 273% from 1997. The top surgical procedures for men included liposuction and neuromodulators, while dermal fillers, laser hair removal, and photorejuvenation accounted for the top non-invasive procedures. Sexual dimorphism accounts for differences in male cutaneous thickness, muscle mass, adipose tissue distribution, and skeletal anatomy. Particular attention to these distinct characteristics are paramount in properly treating the male aesthetic patient to prevent feminization or over-masculinization, which may be perceived as aggressive or threatening. Specifically, in respect to male facial muscle mass and neuromodulator use, a recent review found that only 2 out of 17 studies accounted for sex in the study group subgroup analysis. In one study, men and women were treated with the same dose and men had decreased efficacy. In the second study, men were treated with a higher dose but had again illustrated decreased efficacy. Carruthers and Carruthers conducted a prospective double-blind study of botulinum toxin type A for the treatment of glabellaritids in men and found that 20 units was an inadequate starting dose and that 40 units for glabellar treatment is recommended. Similarly, consideration of male facial skeletal anatomy is necessary when treating the forehead with neurotoxins. Men have a prominent supraorbital ridge with the eyebrow lying straighter along or below the orbital rim in comparison to the female brow that lies above the supraorbital rim with a peak in the lateral third of the brow. Thus, a female pattern of neurotoxin injection of the frontalis can lead to an undesired feminizing arched brow pattern in men. As illustrated in the neurotoxin studies, there is a lack of sex-specific research and thus treatment paradigms. Specific attention is needed to evaluate whether certain aesthetic procedures are more or less efficacious or have an increased or decreased side effect profile. For example, for non-invasive body contouring, cryolipolysis seems to carry an increased potential for paradoxical hyperplasia in the male versus female patient. Thus, further studies are warranted to fully examine if outcomes are related to predetermined gender differences. As the number of men choosing to undergo aesthetic procedures continues to grow, one must contemplate gender-specific characteristics and outcomes. Attention to these details will result in enhanced results and patient satisfaction.